Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by Minnesota Corn Growers, dedicated to bringing you a healthy, safe, and abundant food supply day after day, year after year, on the web at mncorn.org.
6 minutes past 12 o'clock. And good afternoon. Welcome back to Midday here on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Aitken. Glad you could join us. Well, as you probably heard by now, nurses in the Twin Cities metropolitan area are threatening to go on strike at several Twin Cities area hospitals tomorrow morning, and all 12 hospitals could be affected. But tentative contract agreements have been reached at 5 of the hospitals, and a federal mediator has directed negotiators for the other 7 hospitals and the nurses' union to resume their talks this afternoon. The threatened nurses' strike has focused attention on several larger issues facing the nation's health care system, like what in the world's going on? Why does health care cost so much? Why is there so much emphasis on cost rather than care? How good is the care we actually receive? Is the system too short-staffed? Those are just some of the questions we're going to be focusing on this hour of Midday. Joining us to talk about those issues is ethicist Arthur Kaplan, the director of the Center for Bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania. Arthur formerly held a similar position at the University of Minnesota. He has appeared on virtually all of the big-time network news programs and occasionally appears on our Midday program as well. As always, we invite you to join our conversation. Give us a call here if you have a question or comment about health care issues in general. The number to call in the Twin Cities would be 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Arthur Kaplan, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it. Now, before we get started, I wanted to catch up on all the latest on the nurses' strike or threatened strike here in Minnesota. Minnesota Public Radio's Tom Scheck is covering that story for us, and he's here in the studio. Tom, thanks for coming by, and good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you.
All right. Why don't you run down, if you would, please, which hospitals are in which column at this point?
Well, children's hospitals have reached a tentative agreement. That's Children's Hospital in Minneapolis and St. Paul. There's two hospitals there. And Health East Hospitals, Bethesda Rehabilitation, and St. Joseph's, they're both in St. Paul, and St. John's Hospital in Maplewood. All of those hospitals, 5 in all, have reached an agreement. About 3,300 registered nurses in the union. Health East will be voting today on the tentative contract to see if they'll ratify it. And Children's will be coming tomorrow. They're going to delay the strike one day and go and vote on their proposal tomorrow.
And the ones that are still subject then to be shut down at 5:30 tomorrow morning?
Well, Allina has 4, Abbott Northwestern in Minneapolis and Phillips Eye Institute in Minneapolis, United Hospital in St. Paul and Mercy Hospital in Coon Rapids, and then Fairview Health Systems has 2, Fairview University Medical Center at Riverside, and then the Fairview Southdale Hospital in Edina, and then Park Nicollet has Methodist Hospital, which is in St. Louis Park. That's about 5,400 nurses, so there's a possibility that 5,400 nurses, if an agreement isn't reached today, could be walking off the job at 5:30 tomorrow morning.
Now, we should emphasize that if there is a strike, the hospitals will remain open.
Yes, they are bringing in a little bit of more than 3,000 replacement nurses. They say that they're going to probably be having to delay elective surgeries. The thing that they're going to focus on the most would be issues like emergency care. So if someone maybe twists an ankle and goes to the emergency room, they're probably going to be waiting until the strike is over, if there is a strike, because they just say that there's not going to be any, they're not going to have any time to care for things like that. They'll divert them to maybe, whether it's a neighborhood health clinic or something like that, health system type. Neighborhood health clinic.
Now, you've been in contact with lots of people on both sides of this issue. Do you have any sense, if there is a strike, are they digging in for the long pull here, or are people thinking short term, or what's the consensus? Is there one?
Well, the union, I think, really is trying to prove a point, and there's a lot of other nurses unions across the country who are watching this, because they are talking a lot about patient care and saying, you know, patient care is an issue. We feel like we're short-staffed, we're overworked, we can't get out, you know, we're under the thumb of always having to care for patients who are coming in and coming out. So I think the union is, they have said that they're going to be in this for the long haul, and I would pretty much bet that. Now, the hospitals, on the other hand, okay, do we want to pay the upfront money now where it's going to cost millions a day to try and pay for what they're going to be missing and the replacement nurses? or do they want to pay it over the long term of 3 years, where those are what most contracts are, and increase salaries and health insurance. So the hospitals have been saying that, you know, we don't want to see a strike, we want to try and reach an agreement, but on the other hand, the nurses are asking for way too much money, and we don't have that right now, considering Medicare cut, and there was Medicare cuts in 1997, and the HMOs have turned the screws a little bit, so to speak.
And the negotiations resume this afternoon involving the remaining seven hospitals and the nurses.
In the union has been saying on their, their spokesperson has been saying in their negotiating line have both been saying that the federal mediator called them back this afternoon. So okay. there could be an agreement, could go into the night just like Children's went into the night last night.
Could have a long night, Tom. Congratulations.
Thanks. Used to it.
Minnesota Public Radio reporter Tom Scheck, who is covering the threatened nurses strike for Minnesota Public Radio. Well, nurses strike or no strike, there are many other health care issues facing Americans these days. And as we said, Arthur Kaplan has joined us, and we invite you to join our conversation as well to talk about those issues. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Arthur Kaplan, this nurse's situation here in the Twin Cities seems to have raised some pretty basic questions about the overall health of the healthcare system. In general, do you think the system just needs a little tinkering here and there, or a major overhaul, a whole new way of thinking about healthcare?
I really think it needs a major overhaul. I've believed that for a long time. I think if we can go all the way back to when Bill Clinton, in his first term, made healthcare his priority. That was his mission. If you remember back to 1990, 1991, he was going to finally take on this problem of getting the healthcare system to work. His ideas kind of went down in smoke. Part of the smoke was fueled by a plan that was some 1,800 pages long, so a lot of smoke coming out of that thing, almost incomprehensible. And then it was lobbied to death by a whole bunch of special interests, who then said, the way to solve healthcare is to turn it over to the marketplace. If we get all the guys out with their eye shades and pencils and MBAs, the market will fix this for us. And I think the past 10 years, roughly, have shown that that has not worked. We've got the same underinsured, uninsured problem that we always had. There's still tens of millions of Americans with no health insurance. We have the same gripes about the system not being user-friendly, not being sensitive to patient needs. We got doctors and nurses angry and frustrated that they're overworked and underpaid, underappreciated. We've got lots of Americans kind of wondering if they lose their job or have to move, are they going to get coverage? Nothing got better. The market didn't work. And if you look at the most recent data, Gary, the prices are going back up again.
Mm-hmm.
This means overhaul.
How did things get so goofed up? Did the system ever work properly as we look back on the good old days? Were they actually good?
I don't think so. I think we've had a chronic problem in the United States about health care. In the happy old days when we had you buy your insurance or get it through work on a indemnity basis, or that you basically had doctors sending bills into the insurance companies and paying reasonable and customary charges, guess what? We still didn't have everybody insured. Remember, even Medicare as a program for the elderly only came in the 1970s. Medicaid for poor people only came in the 1960s. We had lots of people running around in the good old days who couldn't get health care. I think the costs were escalating out of control in the days when sort of the payers paid what the hospitals and doctors and nurses, for that matter, told them things cost. So I don't think the good old days were any good. I think we've got a couple of flaws in the system, and I think I can diagnose what some of the ailments are.
Blast away.
One is we continue to get health insurance as a privilege of having a job. It makes no sense. Everybody should have to get health care coverage at a minimum level, just like we do with automobile coverage. You should just have to buy it or pay it. It shouldn't be something that you get because you have a job. Health care coverage is not something you should earn. It's something you should be, if you will, forced to hold because everybody needs it. Everybody uses it. We should just assume that either you're going to pay this fee as they do in France and Germany through some kind of tax, or pay it through the national health system as they do in England, where they have that nationalized system. But the coverage issue just has to be done as mandatory, not something where some people get it from a job and some people get it because they're a veteran and other people don't get it because they're not quite poor enough. But if you're old, then maybe you're in. I mean, this hodgepodge thing about how to get universal coverage is a killer, and it undercuts any ability to get efficiency into the system. Secondly, we got to start asking questions about why things cost what they do. You mentioned this coming into the hour. I don't think I've seen a hearing in Congress on why healthcare costs so much. We have a little bit of inquiry into the why drugs cost so much, prescription drugs, but in general, we could use a little transparency about what things cost, why they cost what they do, what the prices are. We don't really have that information. Third, a lot of the people who use the healthcare system are never going to flourish in a market because they are children, they're mentally ill, they have mental retardation. They are illiterate. They don't speak English. If you start toting up the number of people who are the heaviest users of healthcare, you see that while some of us can make choices and act like good consumers, a lot of the heavy users of healthcare cannot do that. And so having a pure market approach, in my opinion, doomed to failure. And that's the lesson I take out of the last 10 years of managed care. There's just too many people out there who can't. We have to have someone else make decisions for them because they're just not up to doing it. And, you know, I guess it's somewhat un-American to say that there might be someone out there who can't fend for themselves, but there are a lot of folks in the healthcare system who just aren't going to be able to fend for themselves. And the last major problem I think we've never solved is this issue of what do we want from healthcare? Do we want good quality healthcare or do we want cheap healthcare? If you tell your boss to buy your health care, you're going to get cheap health care. That's what the nurses are screaming about now in the Twin Cities threat and strike. Too much cost cutting. Everybody knows in the mental health area, we've reduced mental health to the provision of pills. That's what you get. Well, that's cheaper, but it may not be good. And so the other question is, what are we going to do to get measures in that say this is what good quality health care is and find out whether your doctor does a good job or your nurse does a good job or your social worker does a good job? There's no information that tells us what works, what doesn't work. We buy medical care on the basis of, does this person have a medical degree from a nice place, or do they is the care given by the Mayo Clinic, or, you know, it's all done by labels and marketing gimmicks, but that has nothing to do with whether or not on a given day you're going to get a bypass operation that really is going to give you a safe and effective outcome. You got more to put this in English. You have more information on buying a car, about how that car works and what its assessment is in terms of gas mileage and Consumer Reports information than you do on your doctor.
Ethicist Arthur Kaplan is our guest this hour. He is the director of the Center for Bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania, and he has joined us this hour to talk about some of the big issues in the healthcare field. Many questions that have come up as a result of the coverage of the nurses' strike here in the Twin Cities. If you'd like to join our conversation, if you have a question or comment about the healthcare system in this nation, give us a call, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Laura, you're first. Go ahead, please.
I was just wondering, I'm a nurse and I also use healthcare. From your point of view, what about using like a quality improvement approach? It seems like to me there is a lot of players that have a lot of knowledge as to what a good healthcare system would be, including patients. And what about getting like a group of people together, two or three groups, and giving them, you know, four or five rules to operate by? Like the patient, it's a patient-centered system, and having them come up with a new system because our system doesn't work.
Well, I support that idea. I think right now the measure that we come up with is what does it cost, and perhaps something about who's dead. Those seem to be the main outcomes that we're kind of looking for. But you're right. We need to have measures that say, everything from how long did it take to park, to did I really have a doctor who listened to me, to when I was in the hospital over the weekend, did the nurses have any understanding of what was going on? It wouldn't be so hard to develop a list of measures and then start to rank facilities, hospitals, clinics, even private doctors on these measures, and then make that information available to consumers, to patients and people who are thinking about buying insurance. We don't do that. Right now, I defy anybody to tell me on what basis, if you bought your health insurance, you did, because I bet you can't read the tiny print that tells you what you bought. And that's just silly at this point in time. I think Minnesotans, maybe Americans in general, should just finally say to Washington or St. Paul, we've had it enough already. Let's get the information out there. Let's have the quality measures that matter to us, not to our boss or a third-party payer or some other person.
Government involvement is what we need?
Well, I would say we do need some government involvement. I think you don't have to have the health system run by the government. Britain does that, and I'm not sure they've got the best quality there because the government there doesn't want to spend money on it either. But what you need is government attention to collecting information, forcing the providers of services to disclose relevant information to consumers, and then government's going to have to step in and handle probably 40 to 50% of the provision of health care, because those are the people I was talking about earlier, children, people with mental illness, people who are senile, demented elderly, institutionalized people. The government has to be their agent, and we can argue about what's the best way to make that happen, but you're not going to leave those folks out there on their own, so to speak, to fend for themselves in the marketplace. They're just not going to do well. So they've got to be picked up by state or federal government. And then the private sector, it's going to need some oversight, regulation, and steering by government, but it doesn't have to be run by the government.
Mm-hmm. Doug, your question, please.
Hi. I have comments rather than questions.
Okay.
I agree with Dr. Kaplan that measures of quality are a good thing, and we ought to have them. We ought to have more information. But I think that's way down in priority compared to getting control on the price of health care. And to me, the nub of the issue of the price of health care is who do you negotiate with? I was a dirt poor kid in Connecticut growing up in the 40s and 50s, and I never lacked any health care of consequence. I got to see a regular physician when I needed to, and I got to see an ophthalmologist when I needed to. Pretty high price guy, too. Not to my family, though. That was in the days before medical insurance. Things got worse as medical insurance got more universal. I mean, people spent more time in waiting rooms before they ever got looked at. The doctors played the chair jumping game and so forth. In 70 to 79, I lived in Canada under the Canadian system. In that system, the federal government, or I should say the national government, provides money to the provinces to help them with their running their version of running the program, and each province negotiated the cost, the price, I should say, not cost, there's a big difference, the price of health care with the physicians in that province. That was negotiating with the people who actually control the price. And at that time, under that system, I got the best health care I ever had, and I've ever had since.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's no doubt that putting the for-profit insurance company in negotiation with the for-profit health sector might lead to a bad outcome for the payer, that is you and me. that's not the situation you want to be in. And I think, again, I'm pushing on quality, but I want to see price trotted out. But my hunch is that part of the reason our system costs so much is that it's just plain inefficient. Partly inefficient because you got 20% of the population with no insurance wandering around, and everybody's trying to fob their bill off on somebody else. So my first step is minimal coverage for everyone, not just because it's the right thing to do, it is, but it's economically the most efficient and effective thing to do. So I don't care if somebody pays for it out of their pocket I don't care if we all decide that we're going to take a 1% tax off our income. I don't want it linked up to employment. That is a sketchy, tenuous way to guarantee coverage. And I think if we can move out from a minimal set of services, if you will, and saying everybody has to have that, and they just have to pay for it, either out of their pocket or out of a tax thing, or however you want to do it, I think you'll find then that we've set the stage then to move toward more effective negotiation on price. With 20% of the people, if you want to put it less politely, freeloading or carried by everybody else, prices spiral out of control, and we never have enough money in the tiller to kind of pick up the system. This is a political problem in that what we're trying to do is get all the health care we can get at the best quality without really wanting to admit that there's a significant segment of the society out there who doesn't have any ability to get it, but we're not going to let them die in the street. And so off we go, watching the private companies try to get rid of those folks, and they wind up at Hennepin County or wherever they wind up, and then somebody gets stuck with a bill, and up goes the cost because those folks are getting their primary care and emergency rooms and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Universal coverage is the single most important step we could take to get this system sort of under control.
Now, you're talking about efficiency, and you'd say long-term that would help improve efficiency. There are a number of people, I think, who believe, Arthur Kaplan, that we have moved too far down the road of efficiency in health care, that that in an effort to run lean and mean, keep costs down, they've cut too much. It's just been cut to the bone, to the point where there aren't enough people, aren't enough nurses, there aren't enough doctors, there's no slack in the system for surge in patients. Would you agree with that analysis?
I do. I think that the system, in the name of efficiency, has made terrible cuts that impact the quality of care that people can get. I think that if my favorite the sacrificial lamb here is mental health. I think that anybody who's got a relative or has a personal challenge with mental health problems knows that there's no coverage anymore. It's all been taken away, and yet we all know that that's an area of healthcare which is just crucial to quality of life, holding a job, keeping families intact, the kind of what makes life worth living kind of stuff. It's all chopped away. You can't get coverage for anything. People are told they have a 3-day inpatient stay when they're anorexic or psychotic or whatever. So that's a classic example. I think the nurses are right. There's been chipping and cutting and whittling away at their coverage. And, you know, a dangerous place to be on a Saturday night is on a hospital floor because there probably aren't enough nurses there anymore to cover the people in the beds. That isn't, however, that may be cheap, but I would argue it's not efficient. What happens then, to put us in these situations, is that the decisions about what to pay for and what to cut are not in the hands of the consumer. They're negotiated out between insurance companies and hospitals, if you will. And the hospitals really don't have a lot of leverage. The insurance companies are dictating what the services are. And that's why people hate managed care. I mean, in a nutshell, nobody wants some bean counter who's not accountable to anybody telling them that they are going to have one less nurse on the night shift. But that is exactly the system we invented.
Managed care, a total bust?
Yeah, I'm going to say it is. I'm going to say it's a total bust. The dream was not just managed care so it's cheap, but managed care so it would be oriented toward prevention, health promotion. It doesn't do that. That is not working in our marketplace. I think what we've wound up with is siphoning off money for profit out of the system, not improve the quality of care we've gotten, and we haven't expanded coverage. So I'd have to say that's going to amount to failure in terms of a grading system.
Ethicist Arthur Kaplan is our guest this hour of midday. He is the director of the Center for Bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania. He's joined us this hour to talk about some of the larger issues facing the healthcare system in the United States, some of those questions being raised in conjunction with the threatened nurses' strike here in the Twin City metropolitan area. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000, outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. Just a reminder, continuing conversation about this underway online at minnesotapublicradio.org. We'll get to more of your calls here, more questions for Arthur Kaplan right after news headlines. Here's Stephen John. Stephen?
Thank you, Gary. The latest word is Timothy McVeigh and his lawyers have announced that he has decided to fight his June 11th execution date. That word as the Oklahoma City bomber met with his lawyers at a federal prison in Indiana. The basis for his seeking a stay of execution is the belated discovery of FBI files that the agency admits should have been turned over during his trial. Robert Hansen has pleaded innocent to spy charges. Authorities allege Hansen passed U.S. secrets to Moscow for 15 years while working for the FBI. His trial is expected to start in late October. The government is out with disappointing news on the 20th anniversary of the discovery of AIDS. The study finds a resurgence in the disease among young gay men. The report says more than 4% of young gay and bisexual men are newly infected each year with HIV. There's movement in the effort to avert a nurses' strike in the Twin Cities. Nurses and representatives from seven metro hospitals have been called back to the bargaining table this afternoon. A federal mediator called for the remaining hospitals without tentative agreements to resume talks with the Minnesota Nurses Association. Xcel Energy is appealing a decision that would require the company to move power lines in Minneapolis to make room for light rail lines. A federal judge ruled last week that it was in the public's interest for the company to make way for the project. A Stillwater man who admitted selling American Indian cultural items containing eagle feathers was fined $2,000 and sentenced to 3 years probation and 6 months of electronic monitoring. Timothy Cornwolf of Stillwater had pleaded guilty to violating federal protection acts that prohibit the sale of any part of bald or golden eagles. Cornwolf says he will appeal. The forecast calling for mostly cloudy skies this afternoon. There is a chance of showers mainly in the west and south. Highs in the low 60s southeast to low 70s in the west. An increasing chance of showers tonight and into Friday. Grand Marais has partly sunny conditions, 64. In Windham, it's 55 degrees. Park Rapids, cloudy and 60. While in the Twin Cities, it's partly sunny now and 62. And that's the latest from NPR.
All right. Thank you, Stephen. It's 27 minutes before 1. This is Midday on Minnesota Public Radio, and our guest this hour, Arthur Kaplan, the director of the Center for Bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania, joining us this hour to talk about the healthcare system in America and, in a nutshell, what needs to be changed to make that system work better. Barbara, you're up next. Go ahead, please.
Hello. My name is Barbara Kessler. I'm a registered nurse at United Hospital, and I agree with everything that Mr. Kaplan is saying, and I thank you for saying it. I think we need affordable health care, not insurance. And unfortunately, we have a government that in office right now, a Republican plan that is, you know, I'm sick of the spin words, less government. It depends. We're supposed to be a government by the people, for the people. So we should be getting health care, and I think part of it should be part of it as a government system.
Okay, Barbara, I'm going to let you go because your phone is breaking up on us. Arthur Kaplan, is there? You were actually involved in trying to, well, as an advisor on the, on the Clinton health plan. Is there any appetite left at all for a kind of global solution?
Let's see. You give me the chance, Gary, to depress the caller and maybe a good share of the audience, more than maybe on average they might be. I see no interest in Washington in going after this problem. When Clinton's effort, and I was an advisor to that effort, but I should state that I left because I thought they weren't doing a good job getting their message out. So I found that very frustrating about, you know, they got kind of got lost in the details and bogged down in all kinds of economic detritus, but sort of never got a clear message going. But since that time, there's been kind of a loss of momentum for any major fix of healthcare. And I think it's fair to say that President Bush has not made healthcare a priority. It isn't even on his radar screen. I was had the opportunity to be listening recently to Tommy Thompson, the former Wisconsin governor, who's now the Secretary of Health Human Services. So he's kind of the major federal official specifically charged with oversight over health care, and he's made his top priority right now transplants. And I like transplants. Some of the listeners will know that when I was in Minnesota, I spent a lot of time talking about transplants, trying to argue about ways to improve organ donation. That subject matters a lot to me, but it's not. It is not the top priority need of the healthcare system. When you got 20% of your population still with no insurance, that ought to be your priority. When you have kids around the country with no health insurance, that ought to be your priority. So, sadly, right now, not much in evidence at the national level that healthcare reform is going to be on the agenda anytime soon.
Whenever this subject comes up, skeptics would argue that as soon as the government starts mandating that people pay money into the system, inevitably the government's going to start mucking around in the delivery of health care in this country and ruin the good aspects of what we have.
Well, I understand that fear that, you know, the only thing worse than having sort of for-profit companies run this thing is a kind of bunch of indifferent bureaucrats run this thing. The fight, however, should not be over government versus private sector. I know that's politically how this often gets set up. The real point should be, let's get agreement that we have to get universal coverage. Let's get agreement that health care should be a right. It is a right because if you believe in equal opportunity, if you believe in the market, then everybody should have the right to be healthy. That's how they're going to be able to do their best in the marketplace. If you have some people who can't hear, can't see, don't have the right nutrition, have breast cancer, they're not going to do well or do as well as they could in terms of competing out there. So ideologically, whether you're pro-market or pro-government, I think you've got to be for universal coverage, making health care into a right. Then the fight is, all right, how do we achieve that? I've said I don't care about nationalizing the health care system. This is not, you're not getting from me a call for England. You're not even getting from me a call for Canada. I think Americans do want a mixed approach. They want some government. They want some private sector. And I'm all for that. I just simply think we should detach how we pay for health care from employment. I think that has to be either a matter of you can pay for it out of your pocket, you can have it taken out of your taxes, you can pay for it, if you will, by some kind of tax on your salary per month. But whatever it is, you got to do it. You can pick one of five things. You can have a private outfit cover you. You can have some kind of government program cover you. I don't much care. And as long as I'm on a soapbox here, let me add one other small item. I don't even want to argue anymore about, you know, well, how come some people are going to get gene therapy and bone marrow transplants and going to get their baldness treated and get Viagra? Who cares? The issue is not what the ceiling is of a healthcare system. The issue is what's on the floor. Let's build a foundation. Let's have an adequate floor for healthcare. So I want to know what's minimally covered that's available to all. Put that in the market will work more effectively. Put that in and government won't have to regulate so much. Put that in and we won't have to have this kind of three-card Monte game we engage in where people are lying and fudging prices so they can cover the uninsured, which is part of the reason these prices are driven up so high in our country. Then we can argue about, gosh, isn't it unfair that some folks get to have a birth delivery with a steak and some folks just have to have it in a room with a someone else in that room. But the way to get at this, I think, is not to be distracted over inequities about the perks and the high end of healthcare. It's to agree that we're so far overdue to get everybody into the system. It's a minimal way that just has to be the priority.
Norm, your comment, please.
Oh, wow. Where to begin? Well, thank you both for having this program. It's long overdue. The fundamental reason why we get so little for the little bang for the buck, if you want to talk about costs, is because of the heavily flawed nature of our health insurance system. And I say health insurance as opposed to health care because the two are different, although they're obviously highly related.
For instance, just to take up on a point here that you had brought up, Mr. Kaplan, and that has to do with Tommy Thompson's speech. I heard it.
Mm-hmm.
I heard his plea for organ donations, and I was thinking while I was listening to that and afterwards, wouldn't it take a lot of nerve to go and ask somebody, say the father or mother of their daughter, somebody who, a family member who is just killed in a car accident, say, to ask them, and who is uninsured, to ask those people permission to take or to harvest the organs. You know, they wouldn't, if the shoe were on the other foot and they needed a transplant and they didn't have insurance, they wouldn't get it, would they?
I don't mean to cut you off here, but I got to jump in and say, boy, are you on target. I've written about this a lot. I think that Tommy Thompson wants to get more organs. I'm going to praise myself here for a second. I think I've tried as hard as anybody in the past 20 years to find ways to get more organs. You don't get organs from poor people. You don't get organs from the underinsured. You don't get organs from those who lack health insurance for the very reason you're talking about. They don't feel that they have a fair shot to get one. We haven't made ourselves a community about this. You're absolutely right on that.
Hans, you're next. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I want to put in a plug for the nurses. You know, bargain as hard as you can, because the more pressure you can put on the system, I think, the better, because, you know, as we get more pressure, pretty soon something's going to burst. And quite frankly, if I'm in the hospital or someone I care about is in the hospital, I want to be sure that nurse is not dozing out at the front desk because they're working double shifts.
But Hans, what if that means you have to pay substantially more for your health care?
I tell you what, Gary, let's put our ISDN on hold until we resolve our health care issue, and then we can work on ISDN. I think if you ask 10 Americans, 9 out of 10 of them would say, I would prefer that we invest in our health care costs and our healthcare system before we go into, you know, searching for stray nukes that North Korea is going to shoot at us. But,
okay.
You know, I guess my comment mostly was, it seems when the free market acts alone, it acts best when it's involved in areas where people have an option or a choice. And when you get into something where everyone needs coverage, like sewer systems and roads, and I would say health care, then you need to have government in there to make sure everyone is covered. We hear this, you know, sometimes that we want to run government more like a business.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, let's be frank. In a business, if someone isn't pulling their weight, they're gone. And when you're dealing with a society and governing a society, you really can't afford to do that, because those people aren't just going to go away. So we need to, I applaud Mr. Kaplan, because I think we come at a few of these things a little bit different angle, but I think we kind of arrive at the same point, and maybe that's what he was talking about with, you know, the Clintons' poor endeavor into the
mm-hmm.
you know, politicizing this thing. But
okay, thanks, Hans.
Keep on going.
Thanks, Hans.
Well, you know, politically, there's no excuse, whether it's in Minnesota or nationwide, that Republicans and Democrats, and whatever oddball independents I guess we have running around Washington these days, can't agree that they have to have universal coverage. I like to see our political leaders say, look, the top priority here is to get everybody in. It's making an economic hash of the efficiency of the marketplace not to do it. And besides that, it's the right thing to do. So that's what we got to do. That's the goal. Then the battle is to figure out how to do it. If you just leave it to the current political landscape, well, there's some pretty powerful lobbies out there who don't have universal coverage as their top priority. That's not the goal of the private sector. It's not the goal of the hospitals. It's not even the goal of some of the professional unions and organizations that are out there in the healthcare field. But I don't think that it is impossible to get agreement on the goal, and then politically we have to hold our leaders accountable and say, you all agreed that you had to get everybody in there for minimal coverage. You all agreed that it was a absolute scandal for the richest country in the world with the best health care quality potential out there to have uncovered kids, that this is beyond description as an immoral state of affairs, and now what'd you do to fix it? And you've got about a year to bang it out. I don't care, as I said. I'm not calling here for the nationalization of the healthcare system. I don't care if the government has a less than gigantic role in making sure that people pay. But, you know, we worked it out. Your automobile is covered. Your automobile doesn't have to worry whether it drives to another state, whether it's going to be covered. Your automobile sits secure at night in the garage knowing that if somebody dings it or bangs it or smashes it, there may be a long battle between lawyers and companies and so forth about who's going to ultimately carry the freight, but the coverage is there. I guess I would have thought that we'd think our kids were as valuable as our automobiles.
Mm-hmm. Hans, I thought, raised an interesting point, at least indirectly, namely that he wants to see, in this case, the nurses in the Twin Cities stick to their guns and get what they feel they deserve and so on. Is there enough money currently in the healthcare system to actually give good quality care? Give the nurses, a nice decent raise. Hire a bunch of them. Get the doctors taken care of. Everybody taken care of. Is there enough money sloshing around in the system, or is the whole system so underfunded that to do any of that actually does drive up the cost of health care?
Mm. Well, at present, I think there is enough money in the mix to do what we're talking about, bring back some of those lost jobs for nurses, start to make sure that the compensation is right. I would agree. I think the nurses should stand tough, make sure they extract what it is that they need, but I think they need to do it with an eye toward making sure that they have patient interests in mind. I'd give up a little bit on salary if I could get a little more sleep, a little less intense working shift. In other words, I think that's going to be in the patient's best interest to have that more alert, better functioning, more high-quality coverage for patients. That's crucial. So right now, today, given the amount of money we're spending on healthcare, I guess I'd make the case this way. Everybody agrees that the British healthcare system is not doing the job and its quality has slipped beyond acceptability, so they spend 6.5% of GNP on healthcare, and they're not doing the job. But I don't hear any complaints coming from Germany, from Holland, from France. These are countries that have mixed government, private sector programs. They're spending somewhere around 11, 12% on healthcare. Then there's us. We apparently are spending about 13.7%. We have the most expensive healthcare system in the world. And relative to every one of those other countries, we're the only one that does not have universal coverage. So when I look at that, even though I am somewhat dim and slow, I sort of say, there might be a connection between getting the coverage done and then stopping that game of trying to dump those people off. Look at the nursing coverage and the social work and mental health benefits that these outfits have gotten in Europe, these countries, with those expenditures. We ought to be able to move over to that range of services for the amount that we're spending. If you push me, Gary, I'd say this. I actually don't care what we spend. If we want to spend 2 or 3% more GNP, even though it drives some employers and some economists out of their mind to think so, I say great. The issue isn't how much we spend. It's whether we get our money's worth. Right now we're not getting our money's worth.
Margaret, your comment, please.
Hello. This is a great program. I really like it. Some of what I have to say was covered by a previous caller, but it's in connection with a lot of people start to scream if there's any government involvement at all. It's creeping socialism or, you know, it's a threat to capitalism and the market system. But the market system really only works well where there's a flexible demand, where people, you know, if the price gets too high, you don't buy it. That brings the price down. But where there is an inflexible demand, you have to have it anyway, and that is whatever the market will bear, and the market will bear because you have to buy it, and that's an inflexible demand, and it just doesn't work. And so we really need some government, involvement, and I think the universal coverage idea is great. That's my...
Okay.
You know, you really do need some government involvement, I guess, to put it this way. If you started out presuming that at least a third of the people who use healthcare intensively, the biggest users, are unable to to make decisions for themselves. They're the kids and the mentally ill, the severely ill, senile elderly, and people who are, you know, rendered very, very sick because of a heart attack or some major medical problem or a terminal illness. They're in an ICU. They're not shopping. They're not doing anything. They just are relying on others to give them care. So got a lot of folks who can't make decisions. We got a system where you don't have a lot of choice. If the doctor says, I think you need a CAT scan, most people I know aren't going to sit there and say, well, I don't know about that. It costs a lot. Maybe I don't want that. Then you've got, so demand can be generated by the provider in a way that isn't true about beer or football tickets or having lakefront property, which you might say I do or I don't want. And then the person who's paying the bill, your employer, actually is looking to keep it cheap, not looking for quality. So take those three variables, and I think you got the answer to why the market, as it's now constructed, does not work.
Karen, your comment.
Okay. I'm an RN, and I have been watching this situation very closely. What I have noticed, and I did some web searching, was that the three branches, there's branches of the medical profession, and they are really, within the organization, they're not really communicating well with each other, such as the Minnesota Hospital and Health Corps that's doing the negotiation, American Nursing Association, and the American Medical Association. In looking at their websites, each one has their own set issues, and it seems like there's no crossover between the different fields, even though the question is the same, such as how do you get safe patient care. Each organization has their own ways, but if you look at where does nursing fit into the management, nursing is never even mentioned there. And my question is, how do you bring the branches together so that each is truly listening to each other? Nurses have been saying, hear nurses, start hearing nurses. We've been talking about a lot of things for a long time, yet it seems like they are not being heard. How do you get the internal organizations to work together?
That's a good question. That's a tough challenge. I would agree that healthcare providers are not pulling together, even within medicine. Some of the specialty groups of doctors do not talk in the same, they're not on the same page with primary care providers. So the general practitioners, family practitioners, internists, some OBGYN folks and so forth are not always talking to the neurosurgeons and the cardiovascular surgeons and the high-end specialist type folks. I'm going to come back and say the trick to do it is to get simple messages, clear values, agree that that's where we want to go, and then force doctors, nurses, social workers, psychologists, occupational therapists, for all I know, bioethicists, although probably not enough of those to count, but make them all pull towards saying, these are our goals, we all agreed on these goals, here's our proposals to get there. What happens now is everybody sets their own goals, everybody sets their own priorities, they tend to be, dare I say it, sometimes driven by professional self-interest, and that divides. And so if you divide that field and then you leave the policymaking to the well-heeled lobbyists and the large managed care and insurance industries, I think it's no wonder that nurses get outgunned and outplayed in the overall politics of healthcare.
Are there people who have clearly defined black hats in this situation?
Well, there are some pretty creepy for-profit operators. Minnesota does not have that. Thankfully, a long time ago, it got away from the for-profit world of managed care. There are certainly people who've come in and ripped off the healthcare system. Some of the large for-profit managed care things, I think, got into the business, made money, ran away, and left people uncovered or left hospitals a mess. I think some other black hats out there are those who, if you will, do not allow us to understand how things are priced. I don't mean to be pounding here just on the pharmaceutical industry. I think device manufacturers, I think people who are selling sheets and cleaning services, the whole kit and caboodle, we need to have a little more openness about what things cost and how prices are set. And that's a black hat practice when you keep all that stuff proprietary and close to the vest. I'd like to see us open that part up a little bit more so that whether you're a public or a private payer, you had some idea of why what things cost, why they cost, what they do. I was trying to say, Gary, before, if we had an aging population, as we do, and they want more health care services even than they get now, they want to have even more coverage, and they want to have more long-term care coverage and extend benefits. I'm not against that. I don't think it's going to bankrupt the country if people spend on that as opposed to, you know, recreational trips to Grand Marais or something. But the question is, are they getting your money's worth? And to do that, you need to explore prices, and that's where there's been blockage. One other set of black hats, well, to be honest, the malpractice system doesn't work. The lawyers who defend it, the people who support the current structure, I think are a little bit black hats here because that system is not getting out the bad docs. It's not giving justice to people who get hurt. It's not working.
So people have been listening to you this hour, Arthur, and in many instances saying, yeah, you know, he's right, or that sounds pretty good, or he's way off track. But at any rate,
I'm sure there's very few of the latter.
How do you get from A to B? We have a system today that everybody's familiar with, and you're talking about quite a different approach, it sounds like.
Well, there's some opportunity to bubble up here. I mean, I think if church groups, civic organizations, unions, small business can band together and start to say, you know, one of our priorities for the coming legislative session, whether it's Washington or in St. Paul, is to push for ideas about how to get to universal coverage. We think that that's really going to drive cost efficiency. Even high school kids and high school teachers. I mean, I think there are ways to force our politicians to put the subject back on the agenda. It's not there now. I mean, it's just not there. No one is arguing for it. In fact, the only reason we're talking about this is that the nurses got fed up and went on strike. Otherwise, we probably wouldn't be having a discussion of it. It's just not up on the radar screen. Grassroots can do it. It can particularly do it in a place like Minnesota. But I think that's where it has to happen. People have to let their legislators know that this is important to them.
It's a political issue, then.
Absolutely.
But what about, and we don't have a lot of time left, but just to challenge that theory, last year all we heard during the campaign, federal and state level, prescription drugs over and over and over, you know, really not too much talk of it now.
Well, I'll tell you, actually, that proves my point, because that was an issue of the AARP and older Americans. They made it their political issue, and they got politicians to at least talk about it. I'm not sure we won't see something happen this year on that front, by the way. I think that is one area where there's movement, but that proves the point because an organized grassroots effort among older Americans got that issue up on the table. Now, if you ask me, we might as well end today's chat with one other Kaplan irritation. I'm not sure that prescription drug coverage is the most important thing. I'm not against it, but it might be four or five on my list. And so I'd like to see some of those folks in the AARP and some of the other groups that look out for the elderly also watch for kids and get that universal coverage thing on the agenda, because I think they do have clout, and I think their issue is important, but they got to carry along some who don't have the political apparatus and weapons to get heard.
Arthur, it's always good to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Ethicist Arthur Kaplan, who is the director of the Center for Bioethics at the University of Pennsylvania, joining us this hour to talk about the health care system in the United States. A conversation, as Arthur noted, that's been spurred on by the continuing discussion that surrounds the threatened nurses' strike in the Twin City metropolitan area. We'll keep you posted on all the latest on the nurses' strike. Last we heard, five tentative contract agreements had been reached, but seven hospitals still had not reached a tentative agreement with nurses at those hospitals. We'll keep you posted. Gary Eichten here. Thanks for tuning in to Midday today, and we hope you'll be able to join us tomorrow.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by the Pillsbury Company Foundation, caring for the community by giving kids a loving lift.
Talk of the Nation is coming up next here on Minnesota Public Radio.
Take a vicarious summer vacation to France with author Peter Mayle, plus an update on the Twin Cities nurses' strike. I'm Greta Cunningham. Join me for the next All Things Considered. That's weekdays at 3 on Minnesota Public Radio, KNOW FM 91.1.
You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio. Cloudy sky now, 62 degrees at KNOW FM 91.1, Minneapolis and St. Paul. Cloudy through the afternoon with a high temperature near 70. Cloudy skies tonight, maybe some rain late tonight with a low 45 to 50. Then tomorrow, good chance for rain with a high temperature only near 60 degrees. Cooler tomorrow.